Good afternoon and welcome to Focus on the Foothills. My name is Angela and my guest today, Congresswoman Virginia Fox. Congresswoman, as always, it's good to have you with us on the program today.
Thank you, Angela. It's always good to be with you.
Now, of course, big news, and I understand that you're driving around North Carolina today, is Earl is headed toward our Outer Banks. Hurricane Earl, I think it's currently a Category 4 hurricane. So a lot of folks, I'm sure, are battening down the hatches on the Outer Banks.
I'm sure they are, and we certainly don't want them to have to suffer too much with the wind and the rain down there and the hurricane, but I think everybody in North Carolina would like to have a little rain right now. It would be great to have some rain, but we certainly hope it's not going to be of the violent sort.
That's for sure. We're hoping it will downgrade quite a bit from a Hurricane 4. Well, Congresswoman, there is a lot going on in the news right now. Of course, in Washington today, direct talks between Israelis and Palestinians are underway with President Obama, and he's asked both sides to come up with a peaceful solution to the long-running Mideast conflict. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is hosting a meeting today at the State Department with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and Palestinian leader Abbas, and last night, they had a working dinner along with Abbas and Netanyahu. They had the Egyptian President Mubarak and Jordan's King Abdullah II. There have been some attacks in the past few days in Israel, some pretty violent attacks. What do you think is going to become of these peace talks and your take on the whole situation today?
Well, I think everybody hopes that the peace talks will result in some positive things happening in Israel, and for that matter, Palestine too. But unfortunately, the history is not positive in that respect. You know, Israel has made some pretty significant concessions to the Palestinians in the past, and they have just turned them down. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot else the Palestinians can do. Arafat turned down, I think, the best deal that the Israelis have offered up until this point, and it was very disappointing. There's some people who think that the Palestinians don't want peace in Israel and peace in the Middle East, that it's too big an issue for them, and that they do well as long as there is the tension between Israel and the Palestinians. So I'm concerned that there won't be a positive outcome, but I think everybody hopes and prays that there will be a positive outcome to these talks. Certainly the fact that they're talking face-to-face after a long period of time of not doing that is a positive thing to happen. So anytime there's something positive going on in the Middle East, we can hope.
Now, you have said in the past that Israel is one of our staunchest allies, and relations with them, with the current administration, have been a little cool. Do you think that those relations are better at this point?
Well, I think that there was a lot of negative feedback to the administration about the way Prime Minister Netanyahu was treated the first time he came to the White House. And I think the actions on the part of this administration toward the Muslim community in the Middle East has not been accepted very well by the Jewish community in this country and in Israel, too. And my guess is that the president has heard from a lot of people who supported him in his election, and that hopefully he's paying attention to what they said, and that Prime Minister Netanyahu already has gotten more favorable treatment than he got the first time he came to the White House, and hopefully that will continue. And because the president represents our country, those of us who are allies or strong supporters of Israel would like to see the head of the Israeli government given proper accord when he comes to visit the United States. So we were disappointed in the way the Prime Minister was treated, and we're glad to see that the president and his administration are doing a better job this time.
Now, another thing that it really got him some negative news the past few weeks, in fact, I meant to ask you about this last month when we were talking. I did send you an email, and I said I meant to ask one more question. What do you think of the proposed mosque at Ground Zero? And you simply said in four words, it's an abomination.
Right.
I agree. In fact, it seems like most of the country is in agreement. An overwhelming majority is in agreement not to have that mosque so near Ground Zero. Do you think that they will be able to continue with that, or what do you think will become of this situation?
Well, you know, I think that there's been enough of an uproar about this that eventually there will be some way, some space-saving device come appear that will cause these folks to change their mind about where they're building this mosque. I know they're calling it a cultural center, but it is a mosque. And I think that I agree with the people who've said that this is merely an attempt to show that somehow or another these people have won a victory over the United States. I'm not opposed to people building mosques in the country, and obviously they have a right to do that, but I think it shows horrible insensitivities on their part to do it. And if it isn't being done to show some sort of triumph over the United States, then they should have no problems with moving it to a less sensitive place. It just pours salt in the wound of those who lost family members in 9/11 there in New York, but also salt in the wounds of all Americans in terms of the folks who perpetrated the taking down of the World Trade Center. I heard on the news the other day, let me see, how was the one, I think the New York Times was saying that the World Trade Center fell down. I believe that was the word that they used.
Fell down.
And fell down.
Right.
Yes, I think it was no indication at all that it was hit by those planes and destroyed by the planes. It was just like all they were there one day, and suddenly they weren't there. They fell down.
I don't think we have gotten so far away from 9/11 that most of the Americans forget how those towers came down and they were forced
right.
down through terrorism.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what people are responding to in this country, and the folks who are planning to do it should rethink it. I think it's interesting also that this Imam Roth is now being investigated a little bit more, and I hope that he will continue to be investigated, and there are questions about whether he has a church in this one-bedroom apartment that he's now claiming tax-exempt status for. I think our IRS needs to be a lot more careful in terms of the groups that it gives tax-exempt status for, because when some people aren't paying taxes, that means others have to pay more. And we need the entity to be a true religious entity in order to get tax-exempt status. And it shouldn't just be a ruse to get around paying taxes.
Now, you were referring earlier to the fact that most of the time when Muslims have had a victory, some kind of military victory around the world, they put up a mosque to commemorate the fact that they had a victory there. So if they're not doing that, which I'm agreeing with you, it looks real obvious that that's what they're doing in New York, then, again, they're being extremely insensitive to the fact that that's what's done most of the time. So
that's right.
I hope it doesn't go up there. All right. Moving on, this week also marked the end, according to a speech from our president, the end to combat operations in Iraq and a renewed focus on Afghanistan. What do you think that means for the condition in Iraq and for our military around the world at this time?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I'm disappointed that the president did not utter the word success. The reason that we're pulling our troops out is because First of all, President Bush signed an agreement before he left office saying that's what would be done. So it was really President Bush who worked out the arrangements for doing this, not President Obama. Obviously, we're always happy when we bring troops home, and we're glad to be out of a combat role in Iraq. My major hope is that they will soon have a government form there. Several months since the election, and they still have a situation where there's a deadlock about who's going to be prime minister in Iraq. So, first of all, they need to form a government, and I celebrate with the president and every other American when we're no longer in a combat role, but I think he should have at least acknowledged the fact that we are leaving because there is a certain amount of success there. I'm hoping, again, that the success will hold and that Iraq will have a stable government and that we won't have to go back in there. But 50,000 troops are staying there, so we do have quite a few troops that are there, and they will be in harm's way as long as we have Al-Qaeda wanting to destroy our way of life and the way of life of other folks. The president said Pakistan is the good war and the right war. Well, obviously we've had a lot of loss of life in Afghanistan, and it's continuing. So it appears as though we will have people in Afghanistan for quite a while. And we want to get to the point where we're coming out of Afghanistan, too, but I don't think setting an arbitrary deadline was a very smart thing on the part of the president to do.
It kind of alerts our enemies to just kind of hang in there until that point, and then they can have it. Do you think that's what they're thinking?
I think it is, and my understanding is that the chatter on the Internet says that that's the approach that Al-Qaeda is taking. They'd be foolish to ignore it. You know, Angela, I think, unfortunately, a lot of folks in this country think that we're dealing with an uneducated group of backward people. We are not. The people who are fomenting the terrorism over there and here are very sophisticated people who pay attention to what's in the news about this country, pay attention to the news from everywhere, and they know how to use computers, they know how to use every other sophisticated device they can use. So we're not dealing with a bunch of folks who are unintelligent. We're dealing with some of the most intelligent, but also the most diabolical people in the world.
Now, a war that we don't seem to be fighting, or we seem to be ignoring, I would call it a war because there's a lot of fighting, a lot of shooting going on, and a lot of deaths, and that's along the U.S. and Mexican border. The governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer, has certainly been trying to stand for her state and actually getting some grief about that from the federal government. Texas and other border states are really concerned about all of the drug trafficking, the drug wars that's going on right there at the border, and shots fired on this side, on the American border. We've had Americans shot and killed, and yet we aren't seemingly doing anything. Supposedly some money has been set aside to improve the border, but nothing's been done with that yet. And we're suing Arizona for trying to take a stand against the illegal immigration. And then there's been reports, in fact, I think you mentioned this last month, that the drug dealers are so good at coming across the border that now terrorists there's a fear that they could be coming through as well. What do we need to do about what's going on along the U.S.-Mexican border?
Well, what we've needed to do for a long time, and that is put more people on that border and shut it down. We need to stop people from coming in through Mexico, whether they're coming from South and Central America or whether they're coming from any country, but using that route to get in because it's the easiest route to get in. The main thing we have to do is shut down the border, and we absolutely need to be doing that. That would be the number one thing to do. And then we go about trying to do something with the people who are here illegally, but we have to shut down the border first. And we also have to figure out a good way to allow people who want to come here to work to come here and work as long as there is work for them. There's a report today that there are probably about 1 million people in this country fewer this year than there were last year as a result of the poor economy and it being harder to get into the country. So we're moving in the right direction. We just need to speed up that process as much as we possibly can. Sending 30 people to the border, I think, as the president did recently, or some very, very small number, when we need thousands, is not the way to go. But anybody, hopefully, will be a positive person down there.
Well, now, the State Department recently submitted a report to the United Nations Council on Human Rights back on August 27th, just a few days ago. In this document, the administration attempted to make a case that its opposition to Arizona's State Bill 1070 constitutes an effort to restore human rights to that area. Do you think that our current administration, our president, is rather ignoring the severity of the problem along the border and that he's seeing it that we're somehow being mean to those who are trying to get in from Mexico as opposed to trying to protect our own citizens who are being shot at along the border?
Oh, I definitely think so. And unfortunately, this has been true under a Republican administration as well as under a Democratic administration. I mean, we know that the people coming here want a better life for themselves, but they need to come in legally. They don't need to be coming in illegally. If we allow the rule of law to be undermined, then we begin undermining what's good about this country, and we'll be no better off than Mexico and other Central and South American countries are, that are basically banana republics, we call them. I mean, people know what that term is. They are countries that are run, they're full of corruption, and you don't have the rule of law operating, and it's just a chance of birth as to whether or not you're going to be given opportunities. It's not like the United States, and we don't want to allow them to turn the United States into their country.
Well, again, it goes back to the what part of illegal do you not understand? We're talking about those who are legally coming across the border and those who are illegally here.
Right.
So you're not discriminating or going against the rights of citizens or someone who has followed the rule of law, as you said, but this is actually
right.
Those who are breaking the law.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Angela, for people who come here legally and eventually want to get a green card, eventually become a citizen, that sometimes takes 15 years and lots of money. And this talk of giving amnesty to people and letting them pay a $2,000 fine and learn English and then apply for citizenship, well, that's nothing. That's rewarding bad behavior and punishing good behavior on the part of people who've done it correctly. So last thing in the world we need to do is rewarding bad behavior.
Another thing, you had written a release the past few weeks about conservatives come in all stripes, and in that you
right.
said when the federal government spends, taxpayers pay the bill. So you might
right.
be interested to know that in 65, the federal budget consumed the equivalent of $11,337 for every American household in today's dollars. That might seem high until you find out that today the feds are spending the equivalent of $30,000 per household, almost triple the 65 rate. Now, if you think there's something wrong with this picture, you said you might be a conservative. You went on to quote Thomas Jefferson, what he said in 1788, that the natural progress of things is for liberty to yield and government to gain ground. The massive cost
right.
and unprecedented power of the federal government today illustrates Jefferson's point. Are we headed, are we already there, or are we headed more to a social state, a welfare state?
Well, I think if we don't stop the way we're doing things, we will be, and that's exactly what's going to happen. And by the way, I want to point out the dollars you talked about are in today's terms. So money in 65 was about $11,000 and the money now. So those are comparing apples to apples, not money without balancing it out for this year. But that's exactly the direction we're going. We have to rein in the federal government because its natural form, as Jefferson said, is to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and we have got to consciously work at making it smaller, and that's our job as members of Congress. Unfortunately, people in Congress want to do things, and generally doing things means creating programs, spending money, and that often that's what helps grow the government.
It's grown the government, but not the economy. We still have all these people unemployed, and our economy is no better, it seems like, even after all the stimulus package that was passed.
Oh, that's right. In fact, the stimulus made it worse because it caused us to go into debt, and we borrowed all that money. One of the main points I wanted to make in that report is that money that the federal government spends is not manna from heaven. It is money we take from our citizens and then use. And what it does is it takes it out of the private sector. If that money remains in the private sector, then it can build wealth. It doesn't build wealth when the federal government is spending it. But I think too often people hear about federal dollars or federal spending, and they think that that's special money, you know, that didn't have to be earned by somebody. It's taxes or borrowing.
Yeah, it's your tax dollars at work there.
That's right. Right now, we're borrowing 43 cents for every dollar that we spend in the federal government because we're simply not taking in enough money. The economy has slowed down dramatically. People are paying less in taxes. It's having a major impact on Social Security. More money is going out from to Social Security recipients than is coming in from people who are paying into Social Security. So we have a net drain on Social Security this year.
Now, we have talked about this before, but you cannot continue to spend. If you had a household budget that we were running, like we're running the federal budget right now, this would not work at all. And the fact that we continue to borrow from other nations, that there's no way that can benefit us in the long run. That just leaves us in debt to all these other nations, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it just means pretty soon, Angela, the interest, just the interest on the debt, will consume most of the money that the federal government collects.
So there's no way to pay it back at this point?
That's right. We're not talking about paying any principal back right now. We're just talking about interest.
Okay. Well, we're about to run out of time, but let's end the program on a good note.
Let's try to do that.
Let's do that. Recently, you helped Martin L. Luke Cagle Sr., a veteran of World War II, to get his combat medals after 65 years. He earned the medals during his Army service from 42 to 45. He was a combat soldier. Landed on Utah Beach in Normandy on June 14th, 1944.
Right.
And he had not been able to get his Bronze Star or Purple Heart and some other medals, and you were able to help him do that.
Right.
And I understand he's from Winston-Salem, is that right?
That's right. He's a wonderful guy, and I tell you, he's 90 years old, and his family realized that he should have gotten these medals and hadn't gotten them, and I'm just delighted that we were able to get them. He is such a humble man and kept saying, you know, there are other people who did more than I did, but Angela, he was injured, terribly injured, and he lay on the beach for actually 4 days, I think, before he was treated. But he is, again, so humble and so soft-spoken, and I'm so glad that his family contacted us and let us help get those medals for him. It's always a great honor for my office to do that. We love doing it.
You just can't say enough about the American soldier.
That's exactly right. If it weren't for those guys, we'd be speaking a different language right now.
Absolutely, that's for sure. Well, I'm sure that he and his family appreciate your help on that, and we appreciate you being on the program today and taking time out to talk with us.
thanks, Angela. And if there are other families that know that their veterans deserve medals, I hope they'll get in touch with our office and let us help them.
All right. Congresswoman Virginia Fox, thank you so much for your time today.
Take care, Angela. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.